Hiroshima. Hello, Jellyheads, and welcome to another episode of No U-Turns at the Drive-In. We're your hosts, David Halstead and
Lucas Wilson.
And this is a show where we review the strange, the obscure, the B, or cult, or just plain bad movies that have ever crossed the camera lens. And tonight, we are reviewing Village of the Damned, the 1960s version. British science fiction.
We're reviewing Village of the Damned?
Yeah.
Oh, I came prepared with notes on Children of the Corn.
Oh. Well, there's a lot of crossover, so you should be fine.
You think so? I mean,
One was based on a book, too, actually.
Oh. But I had 7 movies written down as notes for side conversations.
You watched all 7? No, wait, there's more than 7. So you watched 7 of the Children of the Corn movies?
Yeah, all of them.
No, there's more than 7.
There's
at least 8.
Yes.
But you said 7.
3 whole notebooks, Dave. This was going to be the most prepared I've ever been. And you're telling me that we are going to be talking about Village of the Damned? I'm sorry, but I don't think I can work with you anymore.
Well, what insights did you gain into Children of the Corn?
There's a lot of children, and there's a hell of a lot of corn.
Would you say there's a larger amount of children to corn or corn to children ratio? And does that change as the series goes on?
I feel there's probably a ratio of 3 to 1 in terms of corn to children. Like every like 3 heads of corn, there's 1 head of children.
I see.
And that's what I wrote about. 117,000 pages.
And what's your feelings on Malachi from the first film?
Thought he had a really dumb name. And he enjoyed corn way too much. And he just needed to grow up and stop being such a child, baby.
Well, you know, when they grow up, when they become 20 years old, they just walk off into the corn and they're eaten by the spirit of the corn.
Yeah.
They can't be adults or they wouldn't be children of the corn. So but at the age of 20, they basically commit like ritual suicide, sacrificing themselves to the corn demon.
Yeah, you're right.
So they can't grow up, Lucas. But I do have to say it's admirable how you're trying to bullshit your way through this to somebody who's read the original short story and seen the first movie.
I think I've seen parts of one of them with my first ex-girlfriend. She had a thing for horror movies.
All right. And didn't you once say your mother had a interest in Stephen King stories and movies?
Yes. She loves horror, and she likes Stephen King.
And yet you haven't, like, just by process of being around it or, you know, having someone in your life who's very interested in that material, you haven't really delved into it?
Nope. I mean, it sounds like we're inching closer with this Village of the Damned.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, did I mention what is based on a book?
You did mention it.
Yeah, it was called The Midwich Cuckoos. Midwich is the name of the town in the story of the movie. And it's apparently was called cuckoos because of cuckoo birds laying their eggs in the nests of other birds.
In the old gum tree?
Yeah.
All right.
So that's what he was basing it on. And the book was written by John Wyndham, who also wrote a story called Day of the Triffids, which was also turned into a classic British science fiction, actually, movie. And it's not so well known here in the States, but I think over in Britain, it's considered a classic science fiction film.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't.
It was a large basis for World's End.
Really? From the description, I can see it, I guess. I can see it.
Now, I do have to wonder about Village of the Damned, if it inspired Children of the Corn in any way. Because that whole creepy children thing, and I bet Stephen King would have seen this movie.
Well, yeah. How old would he have been when it came out?
Let's see. This came out in 1960, and he started publishing in the 70s. I don't think he was very old when he started publishing.
He's one of the most prolific writers out there.
Oh, yeah.
But Dave, enough of the Children of the Corn.
Yeah.
Would you like to give the audience a just a brief description of this film?
So, Village of the Damned, 1960, and is directed by Wolf Rilla, which, by the way, great name, Wolf Rilla. Screenplay by Sterling Siliphant and Wolf Rilla, and starring George Sanders, Barbara Shelley, and Martin Stevens. George Sanders, now he was in a lot of films between the 30s and the 70s, but we would probably not know so much his face as much as his voice, as he did the voice of Shere Khan in The Jungle Book.
Okay.
That's probably a good reference point for most people for who that guy is. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the story? Like, what's this movie about in a nutshell?
Okay. Flash to the British Isles. We in England?
Yes.
We're in England. In a little village full of, like, just a few people. And all of a sudden, everybody goes to sleep. And outside world, it's all like, whoa, we lost contact with these people. We gotta go find out. So then, you know, this police guy, he's running up there, and they see the school bus. Like, oh, I'm gonna check that out. And he bicycles, and then as soon as he crosses this imaginary line, he falls asleep too! And it seems like there's some sort of dome, like 5,000 miles in diameter, both up and around, is surrounding this village. So the military ropes it off and trying to do experiments and whatnot, and all of a sudden, everybody wakes up, except for that guy that died in a plane. And
yeah, because they flew a plane over, and the guy was just
this
like...
This is my story!
All right, go on!
So after everybody woke up, it seems all fine. They're like, oh, we had a nice old nap for like a whole day. Kind of strange, but whatever. Now that we've got military all over the place, and it's like, what? And then one thing you know, almost all the ladies in the whole town are now pregnant. And you're like, how are they all pregnant? They didn't even do any doodly-doodly-doodly-doo. They were all sleeping. And the strangest thing, these babies come to term within, like, a month. And then those kids, they grow fast, too. And you know what the kicker is? They're all super scary psychic kids. And they're, like, hyper-intelligent. So they're like alien babies. Blonde alien babies that just want to kill everyone. And they do kill people whenever they interfere with their meddlingdings, and they get put into school, and then the dad of their leader walks in with a bomb and blows himself up. The end.
Yeah, you pretty much covered it there. Good job. Now,
word.
You just say word? You really just said that.
What?
And here I thought this was going to be the start of a new era for our podcast. I'm afraid I'm going to have to end it.
Yeah.
But anyways, I actually I'm on the verge of being bugged by it, but at the same time, but I'm going to decide it's cool that there is absolutely no explanation at all as to what was going on, right?
No, I wasn't bothered by it. Not so much. It's just...
I wasn't bothered by it at all when I was watching the film. I was actually really caught up in the story. But after the fact, I was just like, wait a minute, there wasn't an explanation for that.
I feel like in this instance, unlike a lot of instances we've had, it wasn't all that necessary to explain exactly what happened. It's just kind of like, it was presented well enough that it... You didn't have to say, oh, it was aliens or whatnot. I suppose some people, and I did think, Chris, it's like, oh, well, they blew up all those kids, but they never explained where they came from or what their purpose was. And I suppose that could actually be kind of a... But I'm not, like, sitting here frustrated from it.
Right, and I agree. I mean, it's just because it's interesting, and I sort of draw my own conclusions, but what I was reacting to... semi-natively was that the idea that the people who created the story I felt like they didn't have an answer. It was just a means to an end, sort of like we'll have everyone fall asleep and wake up, and that's how we'll have these weird kids that threaten the village, and that's the focus of our story, and it doesn't really matter where they came from or anything. But it's presented really well in a really intriguing way. So in the end, that doesn't matter. This is one where it's like, okay, you actually don't need an explanation because you can think about it yourself after the fact, right?
Yeah, I've had times where I've thought up like a cool idea and I just don't know. I just want to do that idea and I don't want to have to worry about having to explain it.
And the explanation would probably suck.
Yeah.
Piece of entertainment.
Oh, there's no, with something like this, it seems like there wouldn't, unless it was kind of like already built on the story right off the bat, but then if you have to try and go and explain it afterwards, it's kind of like, well, no, you leave it up to the audience's imagination and then there's going to be no explanation that's going to satisfy.
Right. And I think that's the right way to do a movie like this. Despite that moment I had like earlier today when I was like, wait a minute, they didn't know what they were doing. But then I immediately let it go because I realized how awful it would have been if we had to go through a whole, all the exposition and origin story of it all.
Oh, yeah. If it was like your standard, like a lot of the sci-fi films we would have seen, like there would have been like an hour's worth of footage where like you got scientists in a lab like pouring over really generic looking equipment and figuring it out. It was like some sort of stupid thing and it'd be just be really boring.
Yeah, I feel like if they tried to make this film today, that's what they would end up doing. It's just spending a lot of time on the all these details of like where they come from and all this expository thing, which is not exciting or dramatic at all. But this is a nice little science fiction story with a lot of creepy horror tones to it. And it really sort of gets you right in the gut. And it's a little story. It doesn't have all these, like I said, it's pretty compact. It's like they fall asleep, they wake up, there's these kids, the kids are born, the kids grow up really fast, they're telepathically connected, and they realize they have to kill the kids before they, you know, grow
to
too old
it is
and
do.
Too powerful for the world to do anything about. It's like, it evokes a lot of science fiction ideas and a lot of like societal fears in that little story. Because basically, the natural humans in the story are looking at these children who are, they're looking at alien species, which is far more intelligent than humans could ever be. And they also have a linked hive mind.
Yeah. So that's hard. Like, you have just having one person or each of them individually being able to like read people's minds and stuff is one thing, but then they can infer it to everyone else. So they could be everywhere in the town and they will know everything that's going on anywhere. And what if those kids grew older and then they procreated and had like more psychic kids?
It could be the dawning of a new civilization.
Yeah, it'd be like a whole new race of people that would just be like when Homo sapiens wiped out all the other races of humans out there.
And also, they're inhumanity. It's very clear that they are, in a sense, sociopathic. They feel no emotion.
Except when something has happened to them. Like, they'll feel in some way wronged by little things and then have to kill that person. Although I guess it wasn't like all too little because like a guy was going to go shoot him. And then they made him kill himself. And then somebody accidentally ran into a girl with their car. I mean, it was legitimately an accident. He didn't see them. Luckily, the girl had super strength and stopped the car.
Mm-hmm.
But they made him get in his car and drive it as fast as he can to a wall. And I was kind of surprised. Yeah. I was almost half expecting them to turn on the mother and just make her like brain blow up or something because she saw what they did. But I guess they were kind of, they knew how powerful they were and they didn't care that anybody knew. They wanted people to know.
And their arrogance was their downfall. And you brought up a point about that we hadn't yet discussed was they could actually control other people.
Yes.
I mean, I said they're emotionless, but they do act very vengeful, even to the perception of somebody insulting them or taking action against them. Like when the older boy takes the chocolate from the smaller one.
Oh, yeah.
And they just stare at him with their glowing eyes, because they have glowing eyes, and they force him to give the chocolate back. Or killing the guy in the car who wasn't trying to hurt them. He was pretty indifferent to them. It was just like, there is the accident that could have hurt the one, but there were, because they felt endangered or threatened by that accident, they killed that guy. And they also feeling nothing about just killing people. It's very unsettling.
So those kids had to go up in a ball of fire.
Which makes you wonder what the, you know, the purpose. Was it a form of alien invasion?
Yeah, was it?
Sort of an infesting species that in order to survive on Earth had to be, you know, born of Earth people, you know, Earth women in a sense. Because the if you think about it, maybe that the aliens couldn't survive on Earth, but they could impregnate their stuff with women and have hybrid babies.
Now, why did everybody have to be asleep to do that? Did, like, was there actually little aliens running around the town, running up to the ladies and shooting something in the stomach?
Yeah, that's one of the things. It's like the story couldn't be very explicit about how the aliens went about impregnating all the women, but they need to have something happen that was unusual, that was sort of the instigating event for the story and the weirdness to follow, which eventually led to the children. And they decided to make that event everyone falling asleep, which probably would have played on, like, chemical warfare and nuclear warfare fears of the time.
Ah. It was the shots that they did of everybody just kind of laying around motionless everywhere, like they were dead, were pretty creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And it does call up, you know, images of, like, you know, gas towns.
Right.
People just falling where they stood, what they were doing right there. And you kind of see it in, like, you know.
Also, there's a whole other aspect to this, which is they're knocked out and then the women wake up pregnant. It's like a roofie.
I don't like this idea of rape aliens, Dave.
Yeah, by the way, I brought that up because, you know, we're watching this movie and it's creeping us out. The level of violation that's going on there and the fact that they have to they carry those babies to term, you know, and yeah. They have this thing that they know is not natural growing inside them at a very rapid rate.
Well, that is, I mean, that causes a problem. Didn't one girl commit suicide?
So the film said there was an attempted suicide.
Oh, an attempted suicide. Okay. And then that one woman who was like the main guy's wife initially was really happy because they didn't think they'd have kids because the guy was so old. But then they're like, oh, hey, yeah, I'm pregnant. But then she finds out that it's like, oh, yeah, you and everybody else is pregnant. And you're like, you're pretty much almost all the way through. And she's like, oh, shit, this isn't his. This is some sort of weird alien baby. And she gets really depressed. Yeah.
In fact, there's a point where the children are older. And the guy and his brother-in-law are talking about the children because the brother-in-law is military.
Oh, yeah.
He works for UNIT.
It looks so much like that. Oh, man.
It's British. They were military. It's science fiction. I just assumed they were UNIT. Then you like brought it up.
Yeah. They all look the part from the Pertwee era.
Yeah. But anyways, there's this conversation they're having, and it's like, and the guy's like, you know, it's your son. And it's like, well, it's my wife's son. You know, it's not really mine. And then they walk out of the room, and it's clear that the mother overheard that, and it was not happy about it. She's just like, oh, that's devastating. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not mine.
It's not your baby, too.
And it's like, after he was so excited when he found out she was pregnant, and then even when they knew it was alien, he was like, it'll be okay, it'll be cool. And then he was always there in defense of the children, but then...
Yeah, he tried to educate them.
Right, and say that they could be helpful to society because of their extreme intelligence.
And in the end, it had to be him.
Right.
To destroy them.
But there is that moment where it was like, no, it's not mine, is it? Not really.
Uh-huh. But he seemed to at least take responsibility for it anyway.
Right. He took responsibility, but there is it displayed some of his inner feelings there that scene.
And would you say that, like, he was, like, the only person that those kids kind of trusted in a way?
Well, in a way... To the extent of which they were using him, Because it's very clear that they were almost amused at his attempts to educate them. They would just ask about, like, what they wanted to know.
Hmm.
And because he was a source of information, they basically used him like... basically, if they had the internet, they would not have needed him.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Could have stuck them all in front of Google, and then all their answers would have been... But then, then they would have been building a nuclear bomb out of discarded smoke detectors, so...
Right. Oh, man, that makes me think this concept needs to be updated.
Did a Village of the Damned reboot?
There was already one of those in the 90s.
Oh, in the 90s. Just as the internet started, and how how-to internet videos back then showed. Nobody knew what the hell they were in for.
It's actually a John Carpenter remake.
Oh, you expect that to... Was it good?
I don't think so. I mean, I think I started to watch it once, and I just don't know. I haven't heard great things about it. Whereas the 60s one, it's got like a 7 rating on IMDb. Which, any movie that has over 70 movies, those are like the greatest movies of all time, right?
5.6 for the 95 one. What the heck? It's got, there's some, not only did John Carpenter direct it, but it had Christopher Reeve and Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There are definitely interesting things about it, but I don't think they add up to a good movie.
I'd be curious to see it after seeing this. And with those people working.
And here's something that's probably even more telling. I watched a brief documentary on John Carpenter's career. There was no mention of that movie.
Really? Okay. But like you said, it was a brief documentary, Dave. Come on.
It is a special feature on a DVD, but they talked about a good number of his films, and they completely glossed over that one. I think there's a canon of John Carpenter movies, you know? And then there's the other stuff he did, and that's one of the other things. But forget about the John Carpenter remake, okay?
Okay.
Not important. Yeah, we watched this before New Year's, right? And then on New Year's Eve, I went to a party with a bunch of people, and I was just like, just brought up the whole concept of the film to several women at the party who were just like, yeah, that's terrifying. They were like, pregnancy and childbirth is scary in its own ways to begin with. That just adds a whole nother level of unsettling shit to that.
Yeah, I could see it. Yeah, that concept would be measurably more frightening to a woman.
It was interesting, though. In fact, one woman at the party started talking about nightmares she started having when she was pregnant.
Oh, yeah? It didn't involve corn, did it?
No, there's no corn. The corn was not even served at the party. They did have those little weenies, though.
Eeny teeny weeny beanie?
You know, the little the miniature Franks?
Yeah, I never really care for those. I'm not a huge fan of hot dogs to begin with, so having tiny ones, just I can pass. I can eat the cookies and crackers laying around instead.
Put pigs in a blanket, man. You put a
You take your damn
roll.
Pig... And its damn blanket, shove it someplace that is unfriendly to talk in front of children.
But just scenes of especially, it was disturbing and uncomfortable, like when the teenage girl was like freaking out at the doctor's office because she's like, I can't be pregnant. I can't be. And he's just looking at her. And she's like, I'm not lying to you. I'm not. I didn't. Do it. I can't have a baby.
Uh-huh.
In fact, that subject matter, that material, was a reason this film almost didn't get made. It originally had begun in 1957, so 3 years early, as an American picture starring an actor by the name of Roland Coleman. MGM shelved the project because it was deemed potentially inflammatory and controversial, specifically due to its sinister depiction of virgin birth.
Okay.
So it's another aspect of this film that's like, it's not really played up, but there is an element of immaculate conception of like the Antichrist, these evil children. And you know that actor who was supposed to star in this? Ronald Coleman?
Yes.
He passed away in 58, and so, you know, when they got George Sanders to play the part, But here's the funny thing. George Sanders married that actor's widow.
What?
How weird is that?
That is kind of weird.
He took the guy's part and his wife.
Ooh.
Kicking a man while he's in the grave.
What I think one of the great successes of this film is the British children are just inherently creepy to begin with. And when you add up all the other creepy factors, there's like the sort of political, social fears of like, was this a chemical attack, you know? And then there's then it goes to the much more personal violation fears, you know? And then it changes to like the social fear of the other within your midst, you know? So it plays on a lot of these different elements. But when it gets to that last one, where it's just like the creepy kids, that really sticks with you. And the kids looked really weird. One of the reasons why was the blonde wigs that they were wearing were built. They had like this to actually make the kids' heads look bigger, like they had a larger skull.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yes.
Okay.
To accentuate like their fact that they were like super intelligent.
Super baby.
Baby geniuses.
Oh, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
I was going to say something and you beat me to it.
Oh. Why? It's disturbing to know that somewhere in my brain, what having seen that movie still exists.
It made a sequel. Why? So bad.
Why?
Because money, that's why.
Completely pointless film. Anyways, back to the good film that we're talking about. Do you think it's time we broke it down?
This is the part of the show we broke the movie down into three separate categories and rated on a 1 to 5 star basis.
And our categories are plot, performances, and presentation. Lucas, what do you think we should rate the plot here? You know, what's our range?
4? 4?
Yeah, I was thinking 4 too.
I'm not like blown away, but it is simple and concise and complete, despite not really giving any answers.
And it's very well executed.
Yes. There's no glaring plot holes.
And the things that are left out of the exposition are left out for good reason. And it's also a story that sticks with you. Like, I saw this film back when I was a kid. I've never forgotten it. In fact, when I brought this movie up at the New Year's Eve party, several people knew it and were just like excited to talk about it with me.
Really? It was part of their childhood too?
Yes.
Maybe you all saw the same special late at night.
Well, no, there were older people at the party who actually like saw it at like a drive-in matinee or something.
I thought you were at like an errand party or something.
No, there was a bunch of different people of varying ages there. It's the same place I go to watch Doctor Who with people.
Oh, okay.
So this was a party that Aaron and Kale were invited to, and I was also invited to. Anyways, it's a good story. It's a story that sticks with you. It's not like some epic thing. It's this very little story. It's almost like a cherished episode of The Twilight Zone. It's like just fondly remember, you know.
It does. Yeah. This could have been an episode of The Twilight Zone, couldn't it?
Totally. It had that vibe and all the political connotations.
Yeah.
And so it's very keyed into that style of storytelling, and also British on top of that. So yeah, 4 stars.
For that you get the head, the tail, the whole damn thing.
Performances. What are you thinking here?
Also 4 stars?
Also 4 stars. Now here's... I do feel that there are weaker elements, but I don't want to drag it down to 3 stars, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the great performance is obviously the leader of the creepy kids. It's just like, the creepy kids is almost a genre of film in itself. And this is the kid that should, like, have his picture in the dictionary under that definition of subgenre. And that kid is just absolutely perfect.
Blondie.
Set the standard for creepy kids. There had been, like, villainous children before, but they may have been come across as, like, mean kids or something, you know what I mean? Or just, like, bad kids, right?
Right.
Where this was just, like, eerie alien child.
Yeah, kind of remove... Well, yeah, because they're not being mean to be mean. They just don't care.
Right. And about that not caring, the relationships between the parents and the children that are present in this film is so cold. It almost... Yeah. And it's like... You can see a little more effort on the parents' part, but the kids might as well be robots, you know, and the parents respond to that by becoming more and more withdrawn from the children.
Till you blow them up with yourself.
Oh, and that ending, man, when he knows the kids can read his mind, so he focuses on a brick wall before he goes to basically deliver the bomb, and he knows he's not coming back. He sent his wife away with her brother, but before she can leave town, she, like, realizes what he's going to do and tries to turn around and stop him, but she arrives too late. By the time she gets there, the schoolhouse blows up. But the kids basically want George Sanders' character to... sneak them away and help them hide among society.
Okay, you're going to have to work a little harder than that.
Right. And so he plans this meeting supposedly for that purpose, because the townspeople have decided to kill the kids. They're trying to find a way to kill the kids. Their first attempt to burn down the schoolhouse failed because the kids used their brain powers and actually set one guy on fire.
Oh, yeah.
And that was sort of a cool thing. It's like the depiction of this town, and it's like in the performances of just the everyday people of that town, it had this great little town appeal, and then it became this little town with a dark secret, kind of, you know what I mean? With an open secret, but a dark, you know, with this darkness hanging all over all of them. Especially like when the mothers all gave birth on the same night, and you had all the men sitting there in the bar, and no one's talking, and no one's celebrating, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It says a lot. There, in fact, one guy just sits there. The only line of dialogue in that scene of the guys at the bar is like, he says something like, they're not natural, that we should kill them. And then it cuts to, you know, the delivery room. And the weaker performance of, like, the military guy, who's just not a very good actor, I don't think.
The
brother-in-law.
Yeah.
He was just too stiff and awkward, and maybe that worked for the military role he was in, but he felt so disconnected. Whereas that town collectively feels like a character, you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, Dave.
That town and the violation they go through, and then the conflict between the townspeople and these children, the way these children have invaded this town, essentially, and ruined all their lives, this once happy town. It's very unsettling, and it totally all comes through in the performances. But yeah, I was in the middle of talking about him thinking about the brick wall and trying to mask his thoughts from the kids. They know they start to catch on very quickly that he's up to something, because they're just reading him thinking about a brick wall. And so they all get together and try to break down his mental barrier, which is thinking of a physical barrier. Very direct, but very good metaphor there, you know?
And I guess the least thing they expected was for him to bring him up, bringing a time bomb.
Which shows that despite their intelligence, they're still very naive children.
They're still kids.
But back to the creepy little boy real quick. When he's talking about how they know society will reject them and try to destroy them. He basically tells his father, we'll do whatever it takes to survive. That's all that matters to us. Your lives don't matter to us. We'll kill all of you, basically.
Uh-huh.
And just a character portraying that's a child. Just like that coming from a child is totally cool and unsettling. From the doctor to the priest and everyone who made up this town and this conflict, with almost the notable exception of the main characters, being the parents and the brother-in-law, who are some of the weaker aspects of this film, character-wise. It's like everything else was really well depicted, and we gotta give it 4 stars.
For that, you get the head, the tail, the whole damn thing.
Presentation. What do you feel on this?
I feel a 3.
I would agree.
Some kind of, some here and there, interesting shot-wise, but I'm not seeing anything like particularly, I gotta say that the quality of the film stock was great, well-preserved. And the scenes swooping in and out of the town while everybody's unconscious was really, really eerie. Kind of had that, you know, something you'd see in a post-apocalyptic film.
Like when they're showing the sink filling up with water, yeah, because the woman's passed out. You know, just people dropped over in the streets. The guy who fell asleep on his riding lawnmower.
The tractor.
Tractor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it runs over a tree and it, yeah. That's creepy.
Like you said, post-apocalyptic. It's just like, it has a feeling, not of sleep, but of death.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. If I hadn't known
the
premise of the film, or like the title, and like it just came on, and like I flipped through channels and I stopped on it, and I just saw that, I would have thought it was maybe the start of like a post-apocalyptic film or something like that.
Oh man, I used to, back when I actually watched TV, would flip through and look for something on TV, the number of times I'd turn to something and try to figure out what was going on, and it was, it's some like weird, that I'd see, it'd be like, what is this, what's going on, and then I'd look up the title of the film, either by going to the channel guide or, you know, when I got digital, I would just say, what is this? And then the title would, like, explain things. Just seeing the title usually gave me enough information.
Yeah, or you come in and you see half the movie and you're trying to, like, guess what the first half was all about. And yeah, then you watch it. And sometimes you're kind of disappointed because your imagination didn't match what the premise was. It was, yeah, don't really get that anymore.
No, one of the greatest times that would happen to me was, like, insomnia when I was a teenager. It would be, like, the middle of the night, and I couldn't sleep because I was probably just drinking soda all the time. Just caffeine constantly, so I was like, I can't sleep. And one night, I'll never forget this one. I woke up in the middle of the night with insomnia, couldn't get to sleep, turned on the TV, turned to a movie station, and there was Pierce Brosnan, or Brosnan, or however you pronounce his name.
Brosnan.
Yeah. Pierce Brosnan, you know, James Bond. I recognized him. I was like, oh, it's James Bond. Or at least he was then. And he's being chased around by this biker gang. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And it had this weird, like, dreamlike fantasy logic to it all. Like, the bikers were this nomadic people, you know, that they're just, they it's like no one knew who these bikers were, and he was trying to figure out who they were, and then they like raided his house and just destroyed everything, and he's trying to stay alive, and like when the sun comes up, they're all gone, like they were never there, like they didn't exist, and it was all in his head. Like, where was there a biker gang? And I'm just like, what is this movie? And then I fell asleep, and when I woke up, I talked about the movie, but I was like trying to describe it to other people. And I'm like, do you have any idea what this is? And no one I talked to knew who it was. And years went by, and I started to think it was a dream I had, right?
Yeah. I feel the same way about some TV shows.
It was like, did I really see that? And then I was in my senior year of college, right? And we're sitting around and we're talking about movies, and usually obscure movies. And that movie came to my mind. And I was like, does anyone know this movie? And there was one of our friends was just like, oh my God, that movie. And I'm like, you saw it too? He's like, you know that movie? And we're just looking at each other. We don't know how to express it. It was like, we were two people who had the same weird dream and realized it at that moment. We were just like, someone else went through this too. Later found out that it's a movie called Nomads. And it's just a obscure little movie.
does the guy wake up and they don't exist?
Or
is
that I've never rewatched it. I'm kind of afraid to rewatch it. It left such an impression on me. And I don't want to ruin that by watching it and realizing the movie just sucks or something, you know?
Okay.
But I'd be willing to review it if we found a copy. Pierce Brosnan, Nomads.
Nomads.
Anyways, that isn't this film.
No.
Now, as far as the presentation goes, we obviously have to talk about the children have glowing eyes.
Well, how that's done is they take a still.
Yes, the film, you could tell that the film freezes.
There's actually a scene, you know, when the mom's holding the kid, it's like the chocolate bar scene when the kid takes
right.
the chocolate, and his eyes are glowing. The movie's like cut in half, and you can see the
split screen.
Yeah, the woman's like shoulders moving around, but the kid's staying still. So it's like her arm gets like cut in half sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like the effect is kind of cool, and I heard they made the eyes glow by actually using a negative of the children's eyes and then kind of animating around that. So it was like a neat idea, but it's also like, it does sort of take me out of the story in the moment where it was just like, okay, they're doing this effect now, and it feels more like a novelty thing now.
It could be done so much better now.
Right. But apparently, the British version of this movie doesn't have the glowing eyes. The kids just, like, stare intently at people.
Really? Why did they have to change it?
I don't know why it's different, but America got the glowing-eyed version, and in Britain, they just stare at people, which may have actually worked better. The interesting difference is that scene where that angry mob comes to burn down the schoolhouse and they set the guy on fire with his own torch by controlling his mind and making himself themselves on fire, you know.
Yep.
Is that they're just staring intently together, you know, all grouped together, staring out at the mob. And then they set the guy on fire and that cuts back to them and the little boy starts smiling.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's not in our, and that just, That actually changes a little bit of that character's presentation. You know, the fact that there's the hint that he enjoyed the malice he was enacting. You know what I mean?
That is psychotic.
Exactly. And it's like, oh, they actually are here to destroy the human race. It's like, that proves it.
Destroy and replace. Destroy and replace.
So we're going to give it 3 stars.
Three.
Here's to swimming with bow-legged women.
So Lucas, your final thoughts and recommendations?
Okay, so when you described this movie to me during the last Truth or Dave.
Right.
I was very intrigued. I was like, Dave, that sounds like a really, really interesting premise. Why don't we find that film? And you told me the ways we found it after some frustrating instances with renting from iTunes. We watched it, and I was, I wouldn't say it's a, it's not like a mind-blowingly great film, but it's a pretty great classic that has a really spooky premise that kind of set the bar for like what creepy psychotic children are like that has become kind of its own subgenre in horror. And you get that all over the place. I mean, you got, like we're joking before, Children of the Corn, or maybe even into elements like, what was that one movie? The Orphan?
Orphanage?
The
Orphanage?
Orphan.
It was just called Orphan? I thought it was called The Orphanage.
No, because there was just one orphan they were working with. Although it wasn't an actual, it wasn't an actual orphan. It turned out it was a woman with proportional dwarfism.
Yeah, this really did set a standard for the creepy kid movie, which there weren't a lot of, but the Children of the Corn movies, and then
there's others.
Yeah, there's a lot of others. I just can't think of them right now.
I mean,
isn't that Insidious have a creepy kid? Or The Omen, for God's sake!
Yeah. It's just that it's become kind of a cliche to just use children for scares. That it's
right.
Hard to think of like a really good one.
The twins and The Shining.
Mm.
That's kind of a moment. That's not like the premise of the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's like definitely The Omen. The Exorcist in its own way.
In its own way.
When I described this film to somebody, they brought up Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
As a, you know, strange pregnancy scenario.
Embryo.
Of course, embryo. Everything connects to embryo. But you know, I don't know what about everybody. I do kind of draw a dividing line in the history of cinema where it was like there's cinema before the 1970s and there's cinema after 1970s.
Yeah, that is kind of different. I mean, because 70s is when those movies that basically changed how movies are now came about. Like Star Wars and Alien and...
So, like, there was the silent movies, and then there was the classic movies, which is, like, the 30s through the 60s. Then there's, like, modern movies, which is, like, the 70s to today.
Yeah.
And as far as the classic movies go, I would put Village of the Damned, like you say, it's not a spectacular film, but I would definitely enter into the canon of science fiction and horror films from the classic era.
Absolutely.
It is certifiably a classic, without a doubt. And I would recommend this to anyone. Everyone.
Everyone. Never be alone.
So if you have thoughts on this film that you'd like to share, please write in and let us know. And hey, has somebody written anything and shared anything lately, Lucas?
Somebody recently had some things to say after listening to our episode of The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Ah, what was
Notre
that?
Notre Dame. I suppose that's really Notre Dame. Hunchback of Notre Dame. All right. This comes from a little dude named Andrew. It could be a big dude. I don't know. I don't really... Just get this little generic person icon. It says Andrew. But he says, I agree entirely with you on this one. I love old movies, but this one seems like purely to allow the star to perform one of his amazing visual performances. I'm saying nothing about David's pronunciation of Notre Dame, but I kept mentioning a hunchback wide receiver. Anyway, as usual, thanks for entertaining podcast.
And thank you for that very entertaining comment. We certainly enjoyed it, and we'd like to see more like it in the future. So write in, folks.
Write in here. And we will share. Don't forget, also on iTunes. That's really helpful so far. Uh-huh.
You'll get into that in your spiel. So there'll be no Truth or Dave this week, as this is your win film.
Oh, okay, good. We can wrap it up then.
But as for next week, I feel like if Village of the Damned is our baby New Year film, evil baby New Year, I kind of wanted to follow it up with another evil kid movie, and I was like, what are we gonna watch? Children of the Corn? And I thought about that, and I was like, no, not Children of the Corn. That's a bit too much on the nose. There's a bit too many similarities between Village of the Damned and that movie. But there is another bad kid film that I've wanted to see for a while, ever since I heard about it from John Waters. Not personally, a documentary, of course, but and he brought up this movie, and I've wanted to see it ever since. It's called The Bad Seed, and I found it online.
Oh, it's got a pretty high rating.
We're going to watch that next week.
7.5.
I'm really looking for it. It's a long film, keep in mind. This is like over 2 hours.
Oh, boy. Yeah, 129 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just over 2 hours, but it's over 2 hours.
Should I?
Yes, I'm really looking forward to this. So please inform the audience what it's about.
I can do this one that's like one sentence long, or we can do the longer one, which is like three sentences long.
Yeah, do the longer one.
All right. Christine Penmark seems to have it all. A lovely home, a loving husband, and most perfect daughter in the world. But since childhood, Christine has suffered from most terrible reoccurring nightmare, and her perfect daughter's accomplishments include lying, theft, and possibly much, much worse. Only Christine knows the truth about her daughter, and only Christine's father knows the truth about her nightmare.
Oh!
Ugh. Oh, guess there's some creepy pictures. Ugh.
You're already getting weirded out about this film.
Boy, she has the bluest eyes.
It's a black and white film, though.
There's like color photos.
There probably are, but it is a black and white film. But I was dead set on tracking this down. I put some work into it, man.
Okay.
Scoured the underbelly of the internet until I found a copy of this movie I could watch without paying for it.
Sounds good to me.
If you're being creeped out, do keep in mind that this film, we're watching this based on the recommendation of John Waters. So just keep that in mind. Send him home, Lucas.
Well, jelly folk, thanks for listening to this episode of Know Your Turns at the Drive-In. We've been your hosts, Lucas Wilson and
David Halstead.
If you enjoyed this episode, may I suggest you hop onto our website at psychojellyfish.com to find this and other podcasts. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and the podcast app Stitcher. Please rate and review. It really, really helps this show out. If you're a fan and you want to help spread the madness, give us a like at facebook.com/psychojellyfish or follow us on Twitter at jellycast. Thoughts, words, comments, questions, perhaps some movie you think we should watch? Send it our way at email at psychojellyfish.com or leave it in the comments section.
Good night, gentle listeners.
Keep it psycho. So, is the box like that for you, Dave?
We don't talk about the box, Lucas. We've discussed this, and we don't talk about the box.
You know what else I've heard, Dave?
What?
That leaves change colors with receding light. Nobody knows what I'm talking about, and that's okay. As long as I get to see Dave's face, his anguished looks.